My next guest looks at the President Obama's administration, I should say, and says that, well, things have not been going so well. In fact, he says that they have set a real precedent in being lawless. In fact, that's the name of his book, Lawless, the Obama Administration's Unprecedented Assault on the Constitution and the Rule of Law. David Bernstein is a professor at George Mason University School of Law, also the director of the Law School Center for Law and Liberty. David, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, is this something every president tries to do, kind of push the limits of their power?
Presidents do tend to try to push the limits of their power, but I think we have a more extreme example in the Obama administration. And there's at least two unique things about President Obama. Mm-hmm. The first is that he actually made some very specific promises during his campaign about what he thought the scope of presidential power was under the Constitution, and he proceeded to wildly violate what he said. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, while a lot of presidents have tried to sort of surreptitiously or subtly or secretly expand their power without anyone noticing, President Obama brags about it. He says, we can't wait for the Republicans in Congress to act, so I'm going to act myself. Mm-hmm. And there's no we can't wait clause in the Constitution that allows the president to do more just because Congress isn't agreeing with him.
Okay. Now, your phone, it was chopping up there for a moment. Hopefully, I don't know if you're in a spot where you can move slightly or hopefully we'll get...
Grab a different line. Yeah. Obviously, we won't have that problem.
Gotcha. You can do that while we're still on the phone, hopefully.
Sure.
Okay. I'll let you go ahead and do that. So you said that he kind of, when he was running, he basically drew out what he wanted to do as president, and then he completely violated the scope of what he kind of declared he was going to do. What did he actually say he was going to do? What happened then?
Well, there was one very specific promise he made and one more general thing he said. The very specific thing he said was that the Boston Globe asked him and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, who are all running for president, and when do you think the U.S. is allowed to commit troops abroad without asking Congress? Mm-hmm. And all three of them answered, only in an emergency. And then when Libya came around back in 2011, the president admitted there was no emergency, mm-hmm. but nevertheless sent troops there without consulting Congress. That's the most specific example. The broad example is that President Obama, when he was running for president in 2008, said, the biggest problem we have in this country is with the Bush administration bringing more and more power into the executive branch. He said, I'm a constitutional law professor. I know about this stuff, and this is unconstitutional. It violates the separation of powers, and I'm not going to allow that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's done the opposite in a whole variety of contexts.
So are you saying he's done things the Bush administration did not do?
Sure. I mean, the Bush administration had a very broad view of the foreign affairs power. So that was somewhat unique to the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. But the Obama administration, for example, was about to Obamacare. There are some provisions of Obamacare that turned out to be politically inconvenient. They were going to kick in right before the 2014 elections, and people weren't going to like it. And he was afraid that this would cost the Democrats votes. Mm-hmm. So President Obama just announced that, hey, by the way, you don't have to obey the law for the next 2 years. We'll worry about it 2 years from now. There's nothing in the law or in our law that allows the president to suspend statutes. Mm-hmm. This was a power the King of England had. And when they designed the Constitution, they purposely said the president must faithfully execute the law and can't unilaterally decide which laws to enforce and which was not to enforce.
So whose role is it to check him and make sure he doesn't do these kinds of things?
Well, I think there are three groups that have a role, maybe four actually, one of which is the courts. The problem with the courts is that very often there's no one who has what we call legal standing to sue. Not anyone could just randomly sue if they think the president has done something unconstitutional. There's some relatively strict rules for who could sue, and often there's no one who could sue, so the courts can't get involved. The courts have checked President Obama a few times with regard to immigration, with regard to appointing the so-called recess appointments when Congress wasn't really in recess. But there's a limit to what the courts could do. Congress can push back, but there's a limit to what Congress could do because, for example, let's go back to Libya. In theory, the president has to ask Congress for money to fund a war. President Obama just ignored that and just took money from a different Defense Department account and gave it to the Libya war. That's actually illegal, but again, no one has standing in court to challenge it. The third person that could stop the president is his own legal advisors. The president appoints a group of advisors called the Office of Legal Counsel. They are presidential appointees mostly. There are a few civil servants also. And they usually bend over backwards to tell the president, yes, you can do this. Here, we found a way.
But they have the power to actually stop him from taking action?
Well, that's the thing. They can only give him legal advice.
Oh, okay.
But other presidents, if the OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel, said you can't do this, say, well, my own advisors who I appointed told me I can't, I better stop. President Obama has ignored them several times. Finally, we rely on the president himself to exercise some self-restraint. And unfortunately, it looks like the president's view of this, and I know a lot of people agree with him, but I don't happen to, president's view is, I shouldn't have to restrain myself, because the Republicans in Congress aren't cooperating with me. Mm. That really assumes that we have sort of a prime minister system where the head of the government, the president, the prime minister, runs the country. That's not the way our system works. In our system, Congress is supposed to be the legislature and advance legislation. The president's really limited to vetoing or signing and then, you know, making arguments.
Yeah, but wait, if he's a constitutional lawyer, is he just interpreting things differently than you are, or how does that work?
I don't think he's interpreting things differently. I think that the president doesn't have that much interest in constitutional restrictions like separation of powers. There's a long tradition going back to the early days of the progressive era and Franklin and Woodrow Wilson and Teddy Roosevelt of thinking the separation of powers is sort of passe and out of date. It prevents the president from being the strong leader that one needs in the modern world. Mm-hmm. So we just sort of ignore those things. We consider them sort of anachronistic, cute little parts of the Constitution that we don't really care about anymore.
Okay. Now, when you talk about Libya, did he view that as just what a part of the war on terror, or is that how it could be viewed when he's starting a war with another country?
I don't understand why we thought it was particularly important to go to Libya, because even his own advisors admitted publicly at the time that we don't really have a strong interest there. Mm-hmm. But the really crazy thing about the Libya intervention is that his Office of Legal Counsel lawyers told him you have to consult with Congress and get their permission. Mm-hmm. His Defense Department lawyers told him, well, you have to consult with Congress and get permission. He finally found a lawyer in the State Department named Harold Koch, former dean of Yale Law School, who said, you know what, you don't have to consult with Congress because the law says you only have to consult with Congress when there are hostilities involved. And bombing Libya isn't hostilities, which is really a laughable argument.
Hmm.
But I think what people liked in the administration about Libya was precisely that it was not a normal war where the U.S. went in on its own for its own interests, but instead it was a war endorsed by the UN, by the Arab League. We were leading from behind, you might remember. So it was kind of the kind of war that liberal intellectuals have been advocating for generations. We don't want to be tough guy America. We want to follow international bodies. Who cares about the Constitution, really, when we can follow the UN?
So tell me, is the next president, could he somehow reverse these powers that the President Obama's put into the office? Is it just a matter of each president viewing the Constitution differently, or does this permanently change things?
Unfortunately, the trend has been over the last 100 years or so that the president gets more power and the people running against him complain about it. And then they, when they actually come into office, take all the power the last president got and then add to it. So it's a real problem. And, you know, there's some of these things like suspending portions of Obamacare are very dangerous. And liberals should be upset about them, too. Imagine President Ted Cruz comes in and says, you know what, I want the capital gains tax rate to be zero. Congress won't go along. I'm just going to announce that anyone who doesn't pay capital gains tax won't be prosecuted civilly or criminally. Mm. And Obama's now set that precedent. I hope it doesn't become a real precedent, but that's a real danger.
Okay. I mean, Congress could act out and, they could censure. They could do all kinds of things. They could impeach him if they wanted to, couldn't they?
The problem with impeachment is that you need a majority vote in the House, which isn't necessarily impossible to get, but two-thirds vote in the Senate. And what the framers of the Constitution didn't anticipate is they thought Congress would want to protect its own prerogatives from the president. They didn't understand that we'd have eventually a two-party system, and eventually one party would be ideologically on one side, mm-hmm. and the other party, they thought maybe it'd be geographic, if anything, and then which it was for a long time, there'd be another party on the other side. So right now, I think it's almost impossible to conceive of a president getting impeached and convicted mm-hmm. unless you had the very, very, very historically unusual situation where the president had a minority of his party in the House and a very small minority in the Senate.
But do you think he should be impeached?
Well, you know, I'm an advocate of impeachment. I think since we don't have a parliamentary system where you could bring down a government that's misbehaving, mm-hmm. I think impeachment should be a lot more common of a remedy. And of the recent presidents, I think President Obama richly deserves it, but we have to understand that it's merely a legal matter. It's a political matter, mm-hmm. and there's not public support for it in both parties because the president has done something so terrible mm-hmm. that even his own party turned against him, then there's really no point in even bringing it up.
Okay, about 30 seconds left, but why do you think the country as a whole isn't as upset about it as you are on this?
I think we live in a partisan age, and that people who aren't paying that much attention, which is the vast majority of people, feel it's all just politics. If the Republicans or even professors are complaining about it, they must just hate Obama, and there must not be any substance to it, and that's as far as they think about it.
David Bernstein, the brand new book, Lawless, the Obama administration's unprecedented assault on the Constitution and the rule of law. The book, again, Lawless by David Bernstein. David, thank you.
Thank you for having me.